This is John Walton, and you're listening to the Power Play Point Podcast with the Blue Liner on point and Anna Knox. Here's Wilson, and on the right side, and he scores!
Hello, welcome once again to the Power Play Point Podcast. This is your host, the Blue Liner on Point, talking to you live to tape from another Sunday afternoon in Glen Burnie, Maryland. And turn around real quick here. Got some activity going on, even though it's off season. So we're here to talk about mostly the free agents and the backroom deals and stuff like that. Now that we've pretty much covered the draft, although some draft goings on is open to suspect and speculation and all that. I was toying with the idea of presenting this because I wasn't sure how many moves the Caps would make. Seems they've already made a few, and there might be some more to come, depending on what they do. But got a guy who should be familiar to you all. Been on here a few times before, used to play the game, also knows the business side of things, and as one of our celebrated armchair GMs live from the, is it North or South Kakalaki? I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. That's outside of the Carolinas, you shouldn't call it that. But Jacob Michaels with us, how you doing today?
Doing good, man. Greenville, North Carolina, ECU,
North Carolina. All right. I'm familiar. Never been there, but I'm familiar with the Greenville area, and it's a pretty good place. It's a strange free agent market. Admittedly, kind of a thin pool. You and I were kind of back and forth on this a few times already, but let's just go ahead and dive into it. The big name right now. And mentioned this on the last couple of episodes, but the big name that Caps are kind of sort of looking into right now is Alex DeBrincat. And, well, of course, right now with the Caps, the problem is the money. And, checking out Cap Friendly, they are sitting at available cap space of $888,000 as of right now. And that makes things pretty tight. But DeBrincat's been talking about as the guy they seem to want. How do you think he fits into the Caps' plans, at least this year?
But it would be what they've said they wanted to do all along, which was shake up the top six. He scored 41 goals in Chicago, and Dylan Strome was his center. So I do think he would be a good fit. If you sign him long-term, you kind of have an option on the power play for the post-Ovechkin era. The big issue with him is the money. It's being kind of leaked that he wants somewhere around 8.75, like a shade under $9 million. So for a team that only doesn't even have 10% of that in cap space, really, you would have to work it around. Now, on the flip side of that is if he's not moved in the next 10-11 days, then his deal would go to arbitration, which would make his trade value immediately plummet, so you could get him for less. So Ottawa is really going to try to move him as fast as they can, and from what I'm understanding, what they would essentially like to do is get him out on a sign-in trade and then use that freed up space to pursue Tarasenko.
Yeah, and that's, I don't know about Tarasenko, but that's kind of what we figured when we talked about this last week, that it would be for him anyway, kind of a sign and trade deal, get him under a contract, so that he's got some value in a trade, bringing him back. Now, last week we kicked around the idea of maybe him one for one for Kuzi, one on one, even swap for Kuznetsov. What do you think of something like that? Because that would, if they could pull that off, that would create room for the, well, or some of it anyway, a good chunk of it anyway, for the salary that they're probably looking to sign DeBrincat to. What do you think of a deal like that, maybe?
Well, I think as of right now, at least before the arbitration period starts, I think if you're the GM of the Ottawa Senators, you look at that as a one-for-one, and you don't even answer the phone call. Kuznetsov's older. A lot of people think he's probably reached his peak. DeBrincat's a younger player. He's a 40-goal guy. I mean, you would have to, at this point, you would have to give them something more than just Kuznetsov, which could potentially work because, you know, like you said, you would need to shed some money to bring him in. So if they could make something work, you would have to add a piece with it. You're not going to get that in a one-for-one slot.
Okay, so when you say add a piece, now ideally, I'm thinking, you know, you if you're going to put in a throw in, ideally you'd be thinking somebody like an Anthony Mantha, but I don't think anybody on Ottawa's staff is going to fall for that. So maybe somebody like well, who else would you have to throw in? Do you think?
On the current roster, it's really hard to say because, for one, they don't have really much else to offer at this point in terms of younger guys. Excuse me. That would probably be more of, honestly, a prospect-type area if you're going to look at some of the guys in Hershey. Which could you could potentially see three or four Hershey guys start the season with the team, so it might work out that way. I'm with you. I think either Matt is going to be on the roster or be bought out, and at this point, I don't really see him getting bought out.
I wish they could simply buy him out, but the problem with the buyout is they wouldn't really get much value out of it. Except to open up a roster spot, because the way the buyout works is it's spread out over 2 years and it's only a certain percentage of the existing contract. So I don't think it would even apply, if I understand it right. I don't think the savings would even apply until next year. So that's the problem with it. And by then his contract will be, you know, expired anyway. So I think what they're thinking now is, you know, just, well, nobody's going to take him. So let him take up a roster spot and, you know, maybe, just let him finish out the contract and then just let him go, which is a shame because, I mean, I just don't see him getting much playing time. And he's just going to take up space at that point. But, you know, as much of a screw up as he's been, admittedly, I don't really wish him any ill will. I just don't think the guy, I don't think his mind is in the game right now. And I've said it before. I think ideally what he needs to do is take a year or so off and figure out what he wants to do. And he's, pardon me, he's talking about hiring a sports psychologist or something to help him with his mental preparation. I don't think that's going to do him much good. Because, like I said, I don't think his mind is really in the game. I think it's elsewhere, and I may even be looking at perhaps. I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions, but we might even be looking at something of a substance abuse issue, if you think about it. Because his situation kind of mirrors Spencer Knight, the goalie for the Florida Panthers, if you think about it. Because
right,
I don't know, he just seems a little off, more than a little off. That's just my observations anyway.
Yeah, and, you know, the games that I've been to personally over the last year or two, he just seems like he's gliding. doesn't seem like there's too much effort put into it. Even at the practices I went to, he wasn't, you know, very active. I will say the game I went to in D.C. against the Islanders a couple years ago, he did score the opener. So I will always have a fond memory of that. But, yeah, like you said, no ill will towards the guy. It's just at the end of the day, this is a business. And if you're not holding up your end, you know, I got to show you the door.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they signed him. They made arrangements to throw in an extra roster player and several draft picks, although, you know, some of them, most of, if not all of them, have been recouped. But made kind of a big deal to get this guy and signed him to something of a big deal. And yeah, you're right. He has not even close to lived up to his end. You know, look, I mean, you can throw away one of the years to injury. I get that. But even so, he just, you know, they signed the guy to have a big body presence in front of the net and, you know, create offense. And he just hasn't done that. And, you know, it's, the team is now in a major retool, and the idea is to get in as many younger players and prospects in, give them a chance as much as you can. And it's not, you know, it's not good when you have a guy not pulling his weight and essentially getting in the way of, you know, those younger guys having a chance. So something else that happened, I'm going to move on from that. Something else that happened, already, speaking of being counterintuitive to something management said, well, part of what they said when they made those big trades at the deadline was to get younger. Well, something they've already done, complete opposite of that. And Marcus and C4 had on last week, both were like, yeah, that's a head scratcher. I don't know why he GMBM did that, and I think everybody knows what I'm talking about, and that's the signing of Max Pacioretty. Yeah, I'm sure you got your own take on that, so what are your thoughts on that deal?
So, I'm a little bit at a crossroads with it, because the more I looked into it, the more I looked into him, it kind of, I saw the thought process behind bringing him on. If you look at it for what it is at the surface, the 34-year-old coming off two torn Achilles, you're like, well, wait a minute. I thought you said we were trying to get younger. And you're like, right. Well, why would you do that? But so his deal is $2 million base salary on a cap hit. When he was signed, everything I saw, they showed the details of the contract to be 1 year, $2 million. It's actually 1 year, $4 million, because he has $2 million in performance-based incentives. And if you would like a good laugh for the day, his performance-based incentives, he will earn an extra $1 million if he plays in a whopping 10 games.
Oh, my God.
He will earn another extra $500,000 for a breathtaking 15 games. And then another additional $500,000 for an astounding 20 games played. So he could make his $2 million in incentives in less than 25% of the season.
Oh, Lord.
So there's one thing. Now, the part that I would like to add is he did only appear in five games last year. He registered 3 goals in those 5 games, which is kind of on par if you look at his last 3 Vegas years. His last 3 Vegas years, I think, was his 30, 31, and 32-year-old seasons. He posted 154 points in 158 games played. So he's almost a point-per-game player. And at that level, he was on a $7 million cap hit. So if you look at it from a monetary point, if he plays and he even gives you half of the output that he was giving Vegas, he's essentially outplaying his contract. He's overplaying his contract. So I do look at it as a low risk, high reward type thing. But again, it is counterintuitive as to what they were trying to do in terms of getting younger. So I'm one of those where I'm just on the fence. We're just going to have to see how it plays out. If he's healthy and, you know, he ends up being a 50, 55, 60 point scorer this year, that's a great signing. But also, if he's not healthy, you can throw him on LTIR and you get that cap space back.
Well, and that's officially, that's where he is right now, is LTIR, right? Because that's, he's not even due to start the season until mid-November.
And I think that's another reason why that they did the contract the way they did. They had to know that he wasn't going to be ready when they signed him. So that tells me that they did their homework. They spoke to the medical professionals they needed to speak to. You know, obviously he's going to have to go through a physical when he gets there and all sorts of things like that. I think that they've covered their bases on him, especially being a team that's dealt with injury as much as they have the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, I do think they looked at it. Because a lot of people, when that came out, they're like, this dude only played five games last. It reminds me a little bit of, because Erik Karlsson won the Norris this year, we act like Ottawa didn't win that trade way back when to get out from under that contract. This was really the only good year he had in San Jose, but we forget all those other years. Last year was really the only year where he hasn't been consistently available, and we tend to forget what he did those last three or four years in Vegas. He was one of their best players, and they were consistently one of the best teams in the league.
So I'm not going to say he does not have value. But what really bothered me was, well, the fact that, you know, it goes against, you know, giving the younger guys a chance, which is what the mandate was at the trade deadline. And, well, of course, the fact that he's, you know, oft injured. That's when I heard that's really what bothered me. Okay, $2 million, yeah, not a whole lot in the grand scheme of things, but it's still $2 million you could have thrown at somebody else. And I know they're looking at changing up the top six, but maybe you get another depth forward or somebody like that, but it still just seems a waste to me. Now let's slightly shift focus, but staying on the same deal here. When you played, when you were a regular player, did you ever have to deal with anything? And if I remember right, you were a forward as well. Did you ever have to deal with anything like an ankle injury, high ankle sprain? This guy tore his Achilles, same Achilles tendon, by the way, twice. That's what he's dealing with. Did you ever have to deal with anything, well, maybe even remotely close to that when you played?
The only real injury that I ever had was an ACL in 2009. But I never had any ankle issues. I had some concussion issues, which if you ask people that know me, they wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, never really any ankle issues, thankfully. But I know it's an entirely different player and an entirely different sport. But it's the same injury that Kobe had. But Kobe had it when he was older, and he still came back. And, like, there were flashes where he was Kobe Bryant still. So it's not impossible to come back from it. Part of me wants to feel like he kind of rushed his recovery on the first one. Because, like I said, in the five games that he appeared in, he looked good. So, I mean, I don't personally have any experience with that injury. Don't really know anybody with experience in that injury. But it is a serious ordeal, but it's not career-ending. I mean, if he has another one, yeah, it's over. You just hang it up. But, like I said, it's going to be a 50-50 shot. Excuse me. The good thing about this, though, is when I look at it, he's on a 1-year deal, and it's only a $2 million cap hit. If we get into late January, February, and the team's just not where they want to be, he would be a perfect deadline piece for a competing team as a rental.
Well,
I think a team will jump on that.
Well, here's the thing. He's got a no-movement clause in that contract. So he would have – I'm sure he would. I would hope he would anyway, but he would have to agree to modify that or waive it entirely.
Well, if he's going to go to a team that's going to legitimately compete for the Stanley Cup, I don't think you would have a problem waiving it.
I think you're right. I don't think so either. I think that if that's the, you know, there's still sellers at the deadline. Yeah, that's not going to be a problem. Yeah, no, it's, I get that. Well, I mean, you hear Achilles tear, and I guess for, you can't see me doing it, but I'm doing air quotes, normal people. Yeah, it's something of a death sentence as far as your mobility. But if you're a well-conditioned, well-trained athlete, then yeah, you can come back from it. But twice, I mean, that's a tough ask for anybody. But if he, I mean, if he plays it right, and if he, you know, gets back into proper shape, he can pull it off. And like we just discussed, he's got quite a bit to play for. If he can, you know, last at least, you know, a quarter of the season or more. So there is that. But now, like you, I'm trying to see the good side to this. And I brought this up last episode. Because, you know, the Caps goal scoring did not, you know, play up to par last year. So I'm thinking, especially on the power play. So I'm thinking, you know, with the new coaching staff, you know, maybe you rethink the power play and put him on it. And I toyed with the idea of five forwards on the power play. Maybe you replace one of them with Carlson. But even
well,
so,
he's a forward,
I mean,
too.
Right. And so, you know, but Pacioretty on a guy like him on the power play can only bolster things. So I'm thinking maybe to reduce wear and tear, and I've said this about Backstrom too, Backstrom and Oshie, reduce wear and tear on those guys. You make them, you know, almost exclusively, you know, part of the power play units. I don't know if that's the plan for this year or not, but right now, that's the only thing that makes sense. You sign a guy that's injury prone right now. That's the only plan that makes sense in my mind. But it'll be interesting to see how Carberry and the new staff, you know, works him into the lineup once he does become ready to play in November.
Well, one thing I will say, and it will probably upset a lot of people that I say this, I would rather pay $2 million to a injury risk player than $9.2 million.
And well, I mean, I know what you're saying by that. And you know what? Before we go into that, let me just say this. I think this season you're going to find out that I'm going to play the no more Mr. Nice Guy card. I am not really going to care. We pride ourselves here in being a welcoming, safe environment. I think now that the Caps are going into a different phase, I think you're going to find that I'm a lot less tolerant of stupidity and people who don't want to back up their argument and just want to get rid of people. You want to come at me with something like that, fine, but make your case. Don't just say it. And so with that said, I think we all know who you're talking about, and that's Nicklas Backstrom. And I can see the argument. I can see that look, I mean, yeah, he definitely gone past his better days, and that $9.2 million for what's probably going to be our third line center is a whole lot of money to be throwing at a player like that who's lost a step that didn't have a step to begin with. So I get that.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, my main argument is you just pointed out when we started, is we have less than $1 million in cap space.
Right.
So, for instance, if you take his 9.2 and you combine that with a guy who has come out publicly that he asked for a trade with Kuznetsov, between the two of them, it's $17 million. That's one-fifth of the entire team's cap space. There's no world. And they were the two worst defensive forwards on the team last year, and it was not even close. The goals for versus goals against when Backstrom was out on 5-on-5 was around 1-for-1, which is not worth that money. His 5-on-5, most of his points came on a power play. He's not a 5-on-5 player anymore. He is on what I call a thank you contract. Thank you for what you've done. We appreciate everything. You are a staple of this franchise, and I believe that. I really do. What I do not believe is when you come out here, you say, yeah, we want to get younger, we want to get faster, but we're going to give this guy almost one-eighth of our cap space. And like I said, it's actually over one-fifth of our cap space between the two of them. It's 21%. If you relegate that down to just the forwards, Backstrom and Kuznetsov are a third of the money that we are paying forwards. And then if you add in Ovechkin's contract, that number jumps to over 50%. So now you've got nine guys that are going to have to share 50% of the money we have for forwards. Just the removal of that one deal would do so much for this team, where you could go after an Alex DeBrincat and not have to worry about making roster moves. It's like, two things can be true at once. I can be thankful for everything that you've done. I can think that you are one of the best players to ever put on the uniform. But I can also look at the money and say, you know, this is not – if we want to get where we want to go, this is not going to help us.
Right. And it kills me to say this, because he's been one of my favorite players all along, also, ever since he started. But, yeah, I mean, it's not that – you never want to say a player's not worth something, but I think it's more accurate to say we're not getting the value of that contract.
No, because he was on pace for 82 – if he would have played 82 games last year, he was on pace for 13 goals at 9.2. Well, you have a guy like Ovechkin who's, what, 9.5, 9.7? Who was on pace for 50. Now, granted, one's a goal scorer, one's not. But you see where the value is in those two separate deals that are almost identical numbers.
Well, now you're getting into – well, I don't want to get into that tangent, but because it doesn't really – I mean, as far as the center position, we're set. And there's no
– Oh, yeah.
There's no free agent centers that are really – much worth looking into anyway, but yeah. I might be a little stuck in the 80s and 90s, but I miss having a center who could shoot. I would really, really love that. And that's why I get on Dylan Strome every now and again, even though obviously he's going to lead the forward core into the next 5-6 years easy and beyond if he decides to stay. But I kind of wish, and it's not like he doesn't have a shot, but you know, I just kind of wish he would think shoot more first. And that's, you know, and we fell into that trap with Kuznetsov, just to bring it back around. And, you know, Kuzi has something of a shot too, but he's always been pass first. And I think, and again, it kills me to think of a team without him, but I think once, if the right deal, I've said this all along, it has to be the right deal that comes along for him, then you got to pull that trigger. But when it comes down to the centers, you got to have, if, you know, whoever's on your first, second line, you got to have somebody who can also shoot in addition to move the puck. And I think they've been missing that for too long. And once they add that dynamic, I think they're going to, you know, be much better. And that's why, looking back at the draft, I'm glad they got, you know, guys like Ryan Leonard and Cristall, you know, because they can move the puck, but they love to shoot too. And I think we need a lot more of that.
I really like Cristall. I thought they hit the draft out of the park.
Yeah, I don't know about some of their later picks, but yeah, Cristall was a home run for sure, and so was Leonard. Something else they've been lacking is that top line grit, you know, Tom Wilson notwithstanding. And Ryan Leonard's got that. And one of the free agents who was no longer a free agent that was kind of on my wish list, I mentioned this on Locked On Capitals about a month ago, was Ryan O'Reilly. He's especially come playoff time. And that I see a lot of Ryan O'Reilly in Ryan Leonard. And you need to have that mentality that once the playoffs hit and the cup is on the line, you better come at those games, every one of those games, ready to die with your Bootsy Collins on. Because if you don't, you are going to be one and done. And no less than the Florida Panthers proved that this year. And quietly, the Vegas Knights did too.
Yeah, that was probably one of the best top-to-bottom championship teams I've seen, with the exception of Aiden Hill being the surprise that he was.
Yeah, Aiden Hill, he was – I don't want to say he was a good enough goalie, but he stole the game when he had to.
Yeah, he channeled his inner Hobie.
Yeah, Good comparison. I think he had a Braden Holtby like final series, rose to the occasion when he had to. You know, they're going to keep their eye open for other options. Hell, I think they re-signed, you know, they got rid of and re-signed Laurent Brossoit also as an insurance policy.
I think Brossoit went to Winnipeg.
Okay, no, you're right. Yeah, he did. Which why he would go back there, I don't know, but that's a whole other story.
Hellebuck wants out, so he could potentially be in line for a starting spot.
True, very true. That'd be one reason, but yeah, I don't know that I'd want to go over there right now. The mess that they are, but
at least they're not the Calgary Flames.
Well, yeah, it's another that's another story right now. You talk about taking a step backward. They took a giant leap backward.
They fell backwards.
My God. And that's, you know what? We were talking about, not to go on another tangent, we were talking about a guy who the Caps signed to their coaching staff, Mitch Love. And that may be why, because they were tapping him to take over the Flames. He was in their minor league, coach of their minor league affiliate. That may have been one reason why. Because better to be an assistant coach at the pro level for a team that has a chance at a success versus a team that's a semi-dumpster fire right now, I think. And I think when Mitch Love gets a chance to see how things work at a pro level, he gets a few years under him, he's going to be a kick-ass head coach in the NHL one day. But we're damn lucky to have him, I think. He's going to do a lot with that young defense.
Absolutely.
I think those guys are going to learn a lot from him. Okay, so you and I went over this list, the notable free agents that remain as of right now. Let's just run down this list. And, yeah, there's some big names here, but overall, like we said, it's kind of thin. Forwards, Patrick Kane, Tarasenko, we talked about, Thomas Tatar, Jonathan Toews, why he doesn't just hang it up right now, I'll never know. Phil Kessel, I think Kessel should retire. I think he's had a nice career. Zach Parise, defenseman Ethan Bear and Matt Dumba, probably the two guys that are going to command any attention at all. And goalies, Martin Jones and Yaroslav Halak. I don't know who would want either one of them unless, you know, you want like an experienced backup or something.
In 2013, this would have been the best free agency class of all time.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of guys with a lot of miles on them, more miles than a 1999 Ford pickup. But
I think Kang ends up in Buffalo.
You think he goes back home?
I think he does. He's at the tail end. The Rangers experience didn't work out. They haven't really, there hasn't been any noise in terms of them with an interest to re-sign him. And Buffalo's an up-and-coming team. He doesn't have to play as big of a role on that team as he would elsewhere. And like you said, hometown team, hometown kid. Now, I think he would be a really good addition for them.
Well, he'd have to take very much a diminished role because, I think the rumor is that I'm hearing is that they want to get rid of Victor Olofsson if they haven't already. You got Tage Thompson and a lot of great forwards on that team. He would have to accept a way diminished role if he goes there.
And I thought he showed a willingness to do that with the Rangers.
Yeah, true. And
he wasn't getting the most playing time, and you know, until they just completely shit the bed in that first round, I thought he was actually playing well.
Yeah, Tarasenko's the wild card for me. I was not impressed with his time with the Rangers, and you talk about oft injured. He would be something of a gamble for me. And mm-hmm. you know, I mentioned. I think you and I might have actually talked about this once, but there was, I think it was 2-3 years ago, they were talking about a 1-for-1 swap with him and Kuznetsov. I am so glad, even with the problems that Kuzi has had here, I am so glad they did not pull that trigger.
Yeah, I am too, because Kuznetsov is a better setup man than he is.
Yeah, and Tarasenko's the more accomplished shooter, but... Yeah, he's injured way too often, and sometimes he just looks like he's confused as to what role he's supposed to be playing out there. And yeah, I have never thought he's been a good fit, even with the change now. So yeah, good luck to him finding a home. And I don't think he even knows where he wants to go. He's fired his agents, replaced them, so he doesn't even know what he wants to do at this point. And then go ahead.
Carolina actually had a press release ready to go. Like, they had reached an agreement for him. They had everything typed up. And then he pulled the plug on his agents, and it just completely sent everything out the window. They're still in the running for him, but with the new agency, it's unclear what he's going to be asking for. So, from what I understand, the two – highest odds are Carolina and Ottawa.
Yeah, I didn't understand it. Why would you not want to go to Carolina unless he didn't like some of the terms of the contract or what they were offering? Why would you not want to go to Carolina?
Well, they just gave $8 million to Orlov, so they may have been kind of low on it.
Well, true. And that's, yeah, that's, oh boy, that's going to sting a bit having to face him 3-4 times a year. That's the other thing. I always thought that Orlov was looking for term, and this may be something of a prove it contract for him.
Anyone offered him term.
Well, and if that's assuming that's the case, then he figured, okay, go for the bucks with a short term contract. But if he can manage to help Carolina to the cup or at least very close to it, because I was very surprised that they died as quickly as they did in the conference final. But if he can get them at least a lot closer, I think this is going to amount to a prove it contract, and he can name his terms when it's over. Even though by then he'll be pushing 35 or 36 by that point. But yeah, he can pretty much name his retirement contract after that if he helps that team, which I think he will.
Yeah, they had two defensemen with 18 goals last year, so he only adds to that.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're going after Carlson. So if they get Erik Karlsson.
I assume we're still talking about Erik Karlsson.
Yeah, so if they get Erik Karlsson, Dmitry Orlov, Brent Burns, and Brady Shea, and Jacob Slavin.
Oh, good Jesus. Lord. Well,
that'd be
so
the best defense in the NHL by far.
That would be the best defense in the NHL. And then you have over in the other division, same conference, probably have the best forward core in the NHL, and that's in Jersey.
Yep.
Bratt, Hughes. I think Andre Palat's still there. God, who did they just sign? Timo Meyer. They just signed.
And they brought Toffoli over.
Oh yeah. Good Lord, I can't imagine a better top six or top nine right now.
No, it's gonna be New Jersey, Carolina, and then a battle for those last two spots.
Yeah,
and I think those two just run away with the Metro. I don't think it's relatively close.
Yeah, that's. Forget about it. And in the Atlantic, it's probably going to be, I would say, Buffalo, Florida, and Boston. Although Boston, I mean, I don't know about them. They kind of did a mini blow up, but.
And their core is another year older. So, I mean, last year was their best year to get it done, and they just didn't do it. So.
Yeah, I don't understand that, but what Boston's got going for them, they probably have the best goalie tandem in the league right now.
Olmark and Swayman.
Olmark and Swayman, yeah. Olmark just won the Vezina with a .936 save percentage. So
Swayman's on an RFA. Have they re-signed him yet?
I haven't heard. But they would be foolish not to at least, you know, extend him some sort of an offer, I would think. Or if somebody, some GM out there does a breach of etiquette and you know, puts an offer sheet under his face and says, here, dares the Bruins to match it, you know, which I doubt, because like I said, that's kind of, you know, there's an unwritten rule where ever since the 80s, you don't do that anymore.
Right.
Right. Yeah, really. I can see him coming back to Boston. I think he's the perfect backup to spell Ullmark. So they've got that going for him. So the reason we're mentioning all this is because, again, dose of reality for everybody. It's going to be a bit of a climb, more than a bit of a climb, for the Caps to get back in the playoff picture. And I get the feeling that they should be contending now. I get that, because Ovechkin's going to be 38 come September. And he's got, what, 2-3 years left on his current contract. And unless he's like 2 goals short of Gretzky's record, he's probably going to call it quits, because I'm sure by then he'll have beaten the record. Okay.
Right.
But the fantasy is, you know, make the team a contender while he's still playing for them. But the reality of the situation is this year is probably going to be something of a throwaway year, because they're going to figure it out. And with those five teams that we just mentioned, it is going to be awfully hard as it is to earn a playoff spot in the East. You're going to have to hope that the remaining contenders really fall down. And Ottawa's getting better. Florida has still, even with Hornquist retiring, they've still got most of their core. Hell, their defense just got better by Gudas being gone, I think. Look, I'm going to call it as I see it. He's an ass clown, and I don't see – I don't know how they managed to get as far as they did with him, but yeah.
Matthew Tkachuk.
Matthew Tkachuk is a bona fide leader on that team. Brady Tkachuk is getting better by leaps and bounds every year. Ottawa, I would be shocked if Ottawa doesn't make the playoffs. They may wind up being a 6, 7, 8 seed, but I will be shocked if they don't make the playoffs. because
they easily, I think they're still about 2 years away, but they could make that. I would pin Buffalo before Ottawa.
Well, Buffalo's definitely making the playoffs. There's no question about that. They have not changed their trajectory, and it's gone upward for a while. So they're making the playoffs.
And I really like that young kid they got in net. Was it Levi?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, you're right. Marcus said some great things about him, and yeah, I think if he holds it, the consensus is that if he holds it together for a year, then they may have finally found their goalie, and that's really all they need, because they have pretty much everything else. They're in the right development track. They're the right age, and yeah, they're definitely making the playoffs. Ottawa's on a good track. I don't see Detroit going anywhere. They're stuck in neutral. And you know, Toronto's Toronto. They're going to be good. They'll be in the mix, but they could be anywhere from second or last, as far as I know, because they haven't figured it out by now, and I don't know that they ever will.
Interesting scenario is if Matthews isn't extended by the new year, I think he could get traded.
Yeah, and that's going to be very interesting, and that's going to be in a town like Toronto. If they let that contract go, that is only going to be a distraction. It's never a good thing when you have a story like that floating out there in a town like Toronto. So yeah, they need to get that done, or figure out what they're doing with him.
Yeah, but the only reason I say that too is this is the same GM that got burned by Gaudreau, where he just walked out and left. They didn't get anything in return for him. Tkachuk kind of forced his way out. So I think if, what's his name, Treliving? I can't pronounce his name.
Treliving.
Yeah, Treliving. If he feels like he's backed into a corner, I think he goes ahead and puts it out there, like, hey, we're willing to do business.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, far be it for me to play devil's advocate for Toronto, but I don't see them, unless it's a return that gets them a crap ton of resources. I don't see Toronto doing anything without Matthews, so they need to figure that out.
Yeah, they certainly do. Speaking of Matthew, go back to Washington a little bit. I thought a really good sneaky signing was Matthew Phillips out of Calgary's farm system.
Oh yeah, yeah. What do you know of him?
I know his AHL stats. He's 265 games played with 237 points, 103 goals, and 134 assists. 25 years old. Everything that I've read on him is, you know, he's a guy that can move the puck, and he's not afraid to shoot. He's two of his five seasons, he's had more points than games played. And granted, this is AHL numbers, so take them for what you will, but it is promising.
So do you figure that he's going to play – he's going to fill in some holes on Hershey, because they're losing a few guys, both to promotion and to other deals. Garrett Pilon is now with Ottawa, if I'm not mistaken. So that's a hole to fill. You're going to have some of those guys come up. McMichael, possibly LaPierre, Riley Sutter for sure come up. So, you know, there are some holes to fill there. So you think Phillips is going to spend most of his time on Hershey, or does he even have something of an outside chance to crack the main roster?
I think it's training camp. I mean, if he shows up, because AHL-wise, he's had better numbers than a lot of our prospects have. So if he shows up and he outperforms some guys, then yeah, I mean, why not put him on the roster? You know, they've already said that they expect to have around three, with Pacioretty out to start the season, maybe four guys from Hershey fill in the roster. You got to assume McMichael and Protoss are one and two. Is Alexiev three? So really, I think there's probably only one spot, maybe two at most, that might go to those younger guys. So it's going to be a battle to see who gets in. But I look at his numbers, and even his playoff numbers, 24 games played and 15 points, 4 goals, 11 assists. And the thing that I really like about him is in the 289 combined regular season and postseason games, he has only registered 63 penalty minutes.
So he won't hurt you on that. He won't hurt you on that part. Doesn't take a whole lot of dumb penalties.
He won't hurt you on that part, and he's damn near a point per game player.
All right, I like it. And this, by the way, is some people question Spencer Carberry's experience in youth. This is an advantage of having a guy like that as your head coach. He knows who's trending in the AHL. He knows who's coming up. I'm sure he's got a book on Matt Phillips. I'm sure he knows what this guy can do. And he's going to, like you said, he's going to have him in his training camp. And if he likes enough of what he sees, then yeah, there's a chance. But either way, yeah, even if he doesn't crack the lineup, he's a good fill-in. He's more than just, you know, window dressing on a roster like Hershey's. I think he'll do fine either way. So yeah, that's, I almost forgot about that, but yeah, it was a fairly good recent pickup by them. You mentioned Alexeyev. You just reminded me of the other deal the Caps made. We've got just enough time to talk about this. Joel Edmondson, what did you think of that that deal?
This was the one that infuriated me. I'm not going to lie. It infuriated me. I didn't see a need for it. You got another 30-year-old player with an injury history. So bringing him on, he's going to be the sixth or seventh defenseman. So either Alexeyev is going to be stuck in Hershey again all year, or he's going to play in Washington, and we just sent two draft picks away to have a healthy scratch. I didn't see the purpose in making this, especially because you have more than Alexeyev in Hershey that could potentially come up on the line. McElrath played last year. He's got a little bit of experience. You'd like to maybe see what he can do. And I know you don't necessarily look to your defensemen for points and scoring, but the reality is we are a team that struggled last year in terms of goal production and point production. This guy has never had one single season. His season high in terms of points is 20. He's never played in, I think this will be his ninth year, never played more than 70 games. When Montreal traded for him when he was in Carolina, they sent a measly fifth-round pick, and we just sent two picks while he's 3 years older, just so they would retain $1.75 million on a contract that we really didn't need. A number I just brought up to you a couple of days ago, if you look at his last two seasons, he has played in 85 games out of a possible 164. A number that we just brought up with Matthew Phillips, I'll bring up with Edmondson. In those 85 games, he has almost 100 penalty minutes. So he'll hurt you in the box. His metric numbers aren't necessarily bad. But again, with all the contracts we signed last year, we've got options in the farm. I just didn't see a need for this when we could have used a guy like an Alexeyev. Again, you know, it just doesn't make sense. Pacioretty, we talked about the injuries with him. That was just recently. Edmondson has had a history of injury throughout the last few years. So to me, I thought it was just, I hate to go back to the word that we've used a few times, counterintuitive as to what we need. And, you know, after, I think it was after this deal was made, was when McClellan had the little press conference, and he just said, well, things didn't pan out. And that infuriated me, is because, well, if things aren't panning out, there's nothing wrong with sitting on what you have rather than trying to force something. And I felt like this was kind of a forced move. You know, you have to get rid of an extra pick. We gave up a third rounder for this guy. And then I'm assuming the seventh rounder was for the retained salary. But that wouldn't be the first time in recent memory that we've given up a draft pick for someone to take on salary from us, with Detroit taking Ponick in the Mantha deal. So I just thought it was, again, I didn't think we needed him. I didn't think there was really any use in going after him. But, you know, again, I will try to be optimistic and hope that we do get his best. Hope that he is healthy. Hope that his metric numbers kind of stay where they're at. The only really bad year that he had in terms of, like, optics, like, really look optics, was last year, where in 61 games he was minus 29. But I look at that as in you're trying to defend in front of Montembeau. Like, you're on a really bad team. So I don't put all the stock in the world to that, especially with the rest of his years. He's generally been a positive player, so I'm hoping that it works out. I just didn't see the need in reaching out for him.
Well, and it's kind of funny because the logic you applied, which is more than sound, is what really ticked me off about the Pacioretty deal. Except I get what you're saying with this trade. And that, you know, not only, well, with Pacioretty was money. With the resources in the Edmondson trade, it was draft picks, which can end up being more costly. I wasn't as pissed off about this deal, to be honest. And the reason being is because more often than not, defensemen will get hurt. You need to have depth on your core. To me, this is a deal to bolster that depth. I would be shocked if Alexeyev either starts the year in Hershey or, you know, spends a majority of the season in Hershey. I would be stunned if that were the case. I think he's more than earned a roster spot, unless he has a training camp where his game just completely goes to Hades and below. And I don't see that happening. If you base on everything on what he did last year, when he stepped in and there were so many injuries on the top six, and he wound up playing 24, 25 plus minutes a game for a 3-4 game stretch. And that's when he proved himself to me. So I don't think he'll be hurt. I think they're going to, and I get what you're saying again, Jake, in that we spent a third rounder and almost $2 million on a guy that is probably going to be playing at best 15 minutes a night if he is playing, or sitting in the press box with a bowl of popcorn. But here's something else that adds value. He's a veteran, and I'm sure he will. I think this is part of why they got him. You've got a lot of new younger guys: Sandin, Alexeyev, Iorio. Now, a lot of guys in the Ferravari that haven't played as much or just coming up. Okay, he's going to serve as a mentor. Now, yeah, Carlson is still in many ways your number one, but his game covers one side of it. So does Edmondson. He covers the exact opposite side of the game. So I think ideally you got two guys who can act as mentors now to teach the rest of these guys, these younger guys, how to play a more well-rounded game. And if there's any benefit to that, there's that. But I kind of see what you're saying, because the things you're seeing are what pissed me off again about the Pacioretty deal. But I don't think they got this guy because they expect him to fill, you know, much more than bottom 6 minutes, if that. Now, if they run into the injury bug again, then yeah, you're going to need him, like it or not. And you know, put your hands together and hope he doesn't fall apart and he, you know, keeps it together health-wise. But I mean, I'm not too upset about it, as long as they don't, you know, don't do anything else. They let the rest of the younger guys develop. Because, yeah, it would be a shame to see Alexeyev, spend any time in Hershey unless it's on a rehab assignment at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, until I see how he fits in with the team on the ice, I know what his numbers in the past say about him, but until I see him in that uniform and how he meshes, I'm still going to say my favorite defensive defenseman is probably Jensen.
Yeah, definitely. He's still probably your best all-around defenseman, although he doesn't his offensive game, he doesn't show enough of, neither does Ferravari. I think we need to see more of that, and that's where a guy like Mitch Love can kind of, squeeze that apple and get more juice out of that, much, much more than the last coaching staff ever did. And so that's why, like we said last week, if you're not thrilled about, signing Mitch Love, you ought to be. Wait till you see what he does with his defense and how they cover the ice and play a two-way game, because I think you're going to like what you see. And, I'm excited about that part of it for the Caps, because I think once these guys start to get more experience and build up their game, then I think you're really going to start to see everything start to flow back into what it was. You're not going to see games that are won 5-0, anything like that. You're going to see a lot of games won 3-2, 4-2, lost 4-2, maybe some boring 2-1 games. You're going to see a lot of that, I'm sure. And there's going to be some blowout games. But I think if you build with your defense, that's always how you've jumped on a trajectory to win championships. And I think with what they've got now, it's a great start.
Absolutely. I'll tell you the other thing I'm thrilled to see is who he brings in for the power play. Because I know what he did in Toronto.
Right. No, Carberry ran one of the top power play units in the league. I can't wait to see what he does with that. Now, officially, they don't have a special teams coach signed yet. So that's going to play into some of it. So he's still looking for that. So that's going to be something to look for as well. But let's wrap it up as far as the free agent market. We went over some names. Okay, so give your honest opinion. Do you, even with the mandate from management where they want to make a splash in the top six, realistically, do you see anything like that happening between now and opening night?
No. I've said this time and time again. Any chance of them getting younger, faster, and better this offseason is going to come through trade. I already knew it was not going to come through free agency. A few months ago, I looked at the upcoming UFAs, and it looked like a nursing home. So I was expecting that. I was not expecting the type of first day that we had last year, to put it that way.
Yeah, I believe it. And I couldn't have put it better myself, a nursing home, because, a lot of those guys, two of them at least, ought to just go ahead and hang it up right now, because I don't see them adding anything to any team at all right now, except Arizona to their salary cap floor. But, I mean, it's kind of going to be a roll of the dice with these younger guys who've got some skill. And, like I said, it's going to be a bumpy year, but it's going to be exciting to see these guys develop and take their first steps on pro ice. And I think for the most part, you're going to like what you see. And unless that right deal comes along. No, I agree. There's not going to be anyone through free agency for sure. And if it is going to happen, it's going to be a trade, but it's got to be the right deal. It can't derail the progress that you know, the prospects and the you know, the first and second year pros are on, the path that they're on. It can't involve any of that, because I think they already dipped their finger in that and got burned. And yeah, I think that GMBM figured out finally that you don't throw all of that away and expect to come out strong. And thank God, because I think his job depends on it. Now, something I was asked last week, I'm going to go ahead and ask you. If the Capitals finish with an extremely poor record, and it's going to be something of a long shot that they even figure on making the playoffs. I, for one, I'm not counting on them to make playoffs, but if they finish something like next to last or last, is Brian McClellan done?
I mean, if you're asking me, he would have been done 2.5-3 years ago.
Oh, I get that. I get that. But, you know,
no,
we're not the one. We're not the ones.
So.
We're not the one signing the check, so.
I don't think so. I don't think he is.
You think he stays even if they finish close to the bottom of the barrel?
Yes, I do, because, and I'm going to say this, Ted seems like a very loyal type guy.
He is.
And the fact of the matter is, McClellan has been in the organization almost maybe over at this point 2 decades. A lot of people don't realize that he was with our scouting division even before Ovechkin got drafted. So, and you see how long we had McPhee. I think at this point, I think that he would either have to resign or we would have to become the Arizona Coyotes for him to get fired.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think that if the Caps do finish a lot worse than, say, middle of the pack and just barely out of the playoffs, the calls for his head are going to become louder, very much so, to the point where you can't ignore them. But realistically, this is where I see the Capitals finishing this year. They will probably finish somewhere between 9th and 12th out of the 16 teams in the East. So if they finish below that, then yeah, you're going to start to see people with the torches and pitchforks come out. But I think if people are willing, this is why I'm saying what I'm saying, people are willing to be patient for this first year. I think all the years after, they're going to like what they see. They're going to like what develops. Because they're on that path right now.
Step up.
What's that?
You have them taking a step forward because they finished last year tied for 13th.
Well, I think they only finished 13th because they quit with 2 weeks in the season left. They could have easily gotten 5-6 more points and improved their standing. And for what? You know, and this is kind of a sore spot with me. All the people that were screaming at them to tank. Well, you got what you wanted, people. They tanked for the last 2.5 weeks of the season. What'd they get? The 8th pick. Granted, the 8th pick was great. Ryan Leonard, I think he's definitely the future of the Caps, for sure, or a big part of it. But, you know, it didn't get them much better than that. So, I mean, the margin for placing wasn't really all that great. I think they're going to finish probably where Philadelphia did last year. And they're not much worse off than Philadelphia is now, I think. So it's not really,
in Philadelphia?
What's that?
Are you meaning the Flyers? Because they finished almost second to last in the East. They had 5 less points than we did.
Well, right. But in the draft order, they had the pick above us.
Oh, okay. No, I thought you meant placement for next season. You were talking about draft play. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's kind of both. It's kind of both. It is what it plays into. But no, I don't see us right now as being much worse than that. But I mean, if it's a step forward, it's a you know, Chinese lady in waiting step forward. Okay.
Yeah.
if that. I mean, if you want to bet on this team to make the playoffs, then and they do, go for it. I don't think they will. I would love it if they did, but I think it would be too much too soon. I would be more than fine if they get anywhere from 72 to 80 points. That's probably their path right now. And
that's exactly where we finished, with 80 points last year.
Right. So, you know, and depending on how the other teams in the East do, some of them might tank, some of them, you know, in that bottom tier might improve. We'll see. But I don't think, the Caps are going to make the playoffs. It kills me to say that, but I kind of don't want them to, because this year has to be that first part of that bell curve, that upward part of that bell curve, where they learn things and figure things out and figure out who they are and how they want to play the game. And it's from that, after you get your feet under you, that you can move forward. I don't want too much too soon. So that's where I think they are.
Do you think they're capable of winning 40 games?
Are they capable? Yes. Are they gonna? No.
I'm in the same boat with you, because I was looking at this the other day. Obviously, I'm adding in the overtime losses in as well. They lost 47 total games last year. That's the first time they have lost more than 45 games since 2007.
Yeah, and between you and me, you on the other side of the earbuds, the speakers, what have you, I think they quit on their coach, and that's what, again, that cost them anywhere from 5 to 10 standings points. So the standings points where they finished were something of an aberration, because they could have done a lot better. And the fact of the matter is, they gave away anywhere from, you know, that amount of points that I mentioned earlier in the 82 games of the season. So it's, if you're going by, that's why I chose to go by draft order, because the standings points are kind of an aberration to me. So
our season ended when Anthony Mantha had a beautiful assist on Evgeny Malkin's breakaway.
They
clawed back in the third period in that game. Well, they were down, 3-0?
Yep. And they tied it. They tied it. They
and
came
then
back.
Not as soon as they tied. Here this dumbass goes, oh, you want a breakaway? Second best player, third best player in Penguins history almost? Here, take it. Jesus Christ. I'm starting to get mad thinking about that.
Oh, I get it. I totally get it. Now, you're not alone. And yeah, to a lot of folks, myself included, that was, you know, the same thing as, you know, taking a 10-year-old Chevy SUV and fixing it up, patching all the holes and brand new tires and all that. And then somebody with a shotgun comes out and shoots the lights out and all four tires. might as well have done the same thing.
Next time you talk to Nick Earl, ask him how my mood was for the rest of that night.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. I was, I said a lot of things that, shouldn't be repeated in front of mixed company.
Yeah, I had to go to confession.
All right. Well, on that note, let's go ahead and finish it out. So, quick question, Jake. Speaking of Nick, you guys still doing Sun Death Sports?
We are. We're going to ramp it back up in September. As you know, like I said, I live in a college town. He's a student at ECU. So for the summer, he went back to stay with family.
Go Pirates.
It's just me at the house for the entire summer. I kind of like it. It's been quiet. But all joking aside, yeah, when he gets back, we're going to probably do a precursor to the season. Just kind of go through, probably do it in four parts and just go division by division. I do think we're also going to talk about what the league has been kind of looking at in terms of relocation of a certain franchise and another potential expansion, because there's a lot of talk going on around that. Which also, before we jump off here, there was two things I wanted to add. One was a signing that we didn't talk about, and the other are some rumors that came out of the rumor mill lately. First and foremost, A+ on the Martin Fehervari deal.
Oh yeah.
A+. That's really good value.
Yeah, I didn't mention that because I kind of assumed that was a done deal. That was, I mean, look, I mean, if they had let somebody sign him to an offer sheet and just walked, you know, which is pretty much what they did with Samsonov. But you know, that's another story, another day. Letting them walk.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I didn't see that happening.
I knew he was coming back. I was more impressed with the terms. I thought I didn't see him getting less than $3 million per.
No, that's not to say, you know, and but anyway, yeah. No, I did not see them allowing Fehervari to walk. So I didn't even bother mentioning that because, yeah, that was, to me, that was a foregone conclusion. What was the other thing you were going to mention?
How do you feel about our beloved Washington Capitals potentially moving to Arlington?
This is the elephant in the room. I don't want to talk about it too much right now, because if it does happen, it's not going to happen for a while. I'll say this, I don't think I'm very happy about it. I'm not happy with the potential of it. But like I said, I'm not going to get too much into it right now, because if it's going to happen, it's going to happen for not for a few years, and a lot can go on between then and now, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah, I just hope it doesn't happen, because I love my pre- and post-game drinking sessions at Clyde's.
Yeah, I think it would hurt the city too much, and I can't see the city letting that happening. So
yeah, and you have the metro that runs right there. You can literally get off the train and you're at the stadium.
Yep, my favorite part.
Oh, I love it.
All right, so I think we're going to wrap it up here. Jake, thank you very much for coming on with me and doing your usual bang up job at looking everything top to bottom. And so that's a Sudden Death Sports Podcast, and that he and Mr. Nick Earle are on. And you guys are mainly on YouTube, as I recall. Is that correct?
Yeah, YouTube for now. When he comes back, we're going to start looking at potentially Spotify and potentially Apple.
Awesome. Awesome. And so, yeah, look out for that. That, once again, that's the Sudden Death Sports Podcast. And unless there's a major break in the team, major happenings, something that we need talking about, this is probably going to be it until, say, training camp. So the Mermaid and I will probably be on sometime then. And we'll take it up then. But for now, thanks to all you out there in the state of Maryland, Commonwealth of Virginia, District of Columbia, and wherever else on this big blue-green planet. Thank you for listening. So this is the Blue Liner on Point, signing off and reminding you. If you have a dog and that dog's running a fever, well, the best veterinarians always tell you to go out and get yourself some mustard. Why? It's the best thing for a hot dog.
Jesus. Oh, Lordy.
Hallelujah, and let's go Caps.
Go Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conklin.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Power Play Point Podcast. Thanks for listening.